Good morning and welcome to Rabbi Sacks' Sunday morning shiur. This morning's topic is Avodah Shebelev, Masha Teruah from Ored HaGashem. The sponsor this morning is Ruth and Meir Edelstein, in memory of Meir Chaim ben Usher, Dovshe Bas Meir Chaim, Fega Bas Shmuel, and Tova Fega Bas Usher Zeleg. May the learning this morning have an aliyah for the neshamos, b'chav v'gadol l'sacks.
As you know, we began with Tfilas Geshem, the recitation of Mashiach Ruach Umarit HaGashem. The Shulchan Aruch tells us in Kuf Yud Daled that that is considered to be vital, that is Le'ikuvah. If a person would omit that, in the Shmoneh Esrei there would not be Yotzei, their obligation of Tfilah, they would be required to daven again. And the Shulchan Aruch comments based on Marami Rutenberg as follows, that what happens if a person is somewhat uncertain as to whether he recited Mashiach Ruach? Would he repeat or would he not? Not such an unusual occurrence. And here, the Shulchan Aruch tells us the following, that we always assume that if a person is not conscious of exactly that which he is saying, that he would adopt his general routine. And therefore, if a person has been accustomed to reciting Mashiach Ruach, we will assume that if he is in doubt, presumably he said it. But yet, if that askara is somewhat fresh, he just began reciting, and for the previous month this was omitted, in such a case, then we assume misafek, the chances are the person did not do so, he is obligated to repeat the Shmoneh Esrei. So therefore, the Torah is Kuf Yud Daled, that for the window of time of a month, in such a case, if a person is in a situation of suffix, then he will be obligated to repeat. After that time expires, then we can assume already the habit has set in, and he has recited Mashiach Ruach, and in doubt, he does not repeat the Shmoneh Esrei. And then the tour continues and quotes the fasting of Machlokes, Marami Rutenberg versus Rabbeinu Peretz. The typical example is for a month a person has recited Mashiach Ruach, and therefore already his mindset is to mention that in Shmoneh Esrei. But what about the following possibility? A person, let's assume, on the day of Shmini Atzeres, on Simchas Torah, will repeatedly recite Mashiach Ruach Umarit HaGeshem. If he does so repeatedly, and therefore he is mentioning it for the same number of times that he would do for an entire month, maybe one could argue already the mindset is established, and now, even if he's in doubt the next day, he would not have to repeat the Shmoneh Esrei. And that is the view of Rami Rutenberg, that if a person has repeatedly recited, even at the beginning of that Zman, Mashiach Ruach, in such a case, then Misafek, he does not repeat. In some yeshivas, they have a special niggin of Mashiach Ruach that they keep on singing over and over and over again. In such a case, they already have fulfilled that requirement of Rami Rutenberg. And that's what the Torah suggests. Correct. Even though it's not in the full context of Shmoneh Esrei, and even though it's done in quick, rapid succession, Rutenberg says that's considered to be sufficient. Where do you see that this is true?
What do you say? There's 90 times they said it?
Correct. Right. They would say it.
How covered they?
Right. They would go ahead and do so, and therefore, now you're covered midin suffix. And Rabbeinu Peretz disagrees and writes that certainly is not the case. But what would the riot to Rutenberg be? So if you look in the Torah Kuf Yud Daled, he quotes a seemingly unrelated machlokes, that of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, Parshas Mishpatim, regarding a shor hamuad. When the Torah describes a shor hamuad, it means there is a shor that habitually will cause damage, will engage in negicha, and therefore, unlike a shor tam that only pays chatzi nezek, the shor hamuad is obligated now, its owner must pay nezek shalem. The pasuk tells us the following, v'im shor nagachu mitmo shilshom. If for successive days the animal is goring, in such a case now, it establishes a shor hamuad, the owner of that shor has to exercise extreme watch, extreme care, because he knows that he owns an animal that has the tendency of causing damage. So when Torah describes the shor mitmo shulshom, it means it gored on day one, and then it gored on day two, it gored on day three, and in such a case now, a fourth goring, one is obligated to pay nezek shalim. Rabbi Yehuda says that if you look in the pasuk mitmo shulshom, it mentions goring on different days. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says that is considered to be vital. It has to gore on a day, and then another day, and then a third day. Let's assume, for example, example, all three acts of damage are caused in a single day, then the shor would not become a shor hamuad. In other words, it is only if you meet that requirement of mitmo shoshon. And Rabbi Meir disagrees. This is the sugya of a comment of Chav Gimel. That is not true. When the Torah tells us if it gores on one day and a second day and a third day, it doesn't mean only, but rather it means even. Even if the goring occurs on successive days. Maybe one could have argued if it gores one day, and then a month later it gores again, a month later it gores again, those are considered to be random acts. It's not indicative necessarily of a pattern. But if it's in a closer window of time, all three negichos occur on the very same day, so that's the language of Remer, in Rechet negichos of Chayiv, Kerb negichos of Okoshkein. If over a window of time you can declare this as a Shur Hamuad, certainly if it is in a closer window, if it would be on the same day. So fasting in my focus, Rabbi Yudin, Rabbi Meir, in order to render a shor hamuad, must it be on different days or must it not? Rabbi Meir is the one who utilizes that kal v'chomer, that if it can be spread, certainly it can be condensed. So that is the raya that Maron Rutenberg brings. You see, according to Rabbi Meir, in order to establish that sense of pattern, so in such a case, the shorter the window of time, the greater the indicator. And just as when it comes to a shor hamuad, kerev negichos of lo kolshkein, certainly it's a shor hamuad, the same thing is true when it comes to mashiv haruach. And therefore, if you have recited mashiv haruach over a month's period of time, you no longer have to repeat in the case of doubt, so certainly if you've established that pattern in a shorter window of time. That is the view of Marami Rittenberg. So the Torah continues and quotes the view of Rabbi Neperet that points out, is that really the case? Can one necessarily assume what is true of a shor hamuad is also true of mashiv haruach? Because perhaps one can argue as follows. When it comes to a shor hamuad, there, Rabbi Neperet writes, we are interested in assessing the tendency, the inclination of this animal. Is this a meek animal or is this a very aggressive animal? There perhaps one could reasonably argue, if it gores successively, repeated, I've had this animal for a day, and already there have been three instances where the animal has caused damage, that's a good indication that this is a very aggressive animal. But Rabbi Neperet writes as follows, if you're talking about memory, you're talking about a mindset, the impact that it would have, right, on your reciting Shemoneh Esrei, when you cram for a test, right, or as opposed to a person who kind of studies very methodically, a little bit each and every day, I think everyone will agree that the one who studies and spreads it over time, the information is going to stick a little bit better than if a person absolutely crams. That's what Rabbeinu Peretz writes. If you want to know what triggers the memory, then when you spread over time, that is considered to be more advantageous. If you want to know the tendency of an animal, so the shorter the window of time, then the more it indicates that this is an aggressive animal. So therefore, Ben Oteretz writes that how can Maron Rutenberg compare the case of a shor hamuad with the case of mashiv haruach? And therefore, he disagrees and writes that no, this has to be established over time. The fact that you said a nigin, and in the nigin, right, 90 times you mentioned mashiv haruach, that is considered to be insufficient. And interesting, the Torah concludes, quoting the Rush, following this view of the Maron Rutenberg. A further difficulty, and this is what the Nodi Buddha points out in Siman Chavav, is the following. You know, it sounds very nice to quote that view of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir that says you become a shor hamuad even if the time is condensed, but you know what? We don't paskin like Rabbi Meir. We assume like the view of Rabbi Yehuda. And that is you only become a shor hamuad if you meet that requirement of the pasuk of mitmo shulshom. And if the shor would perform negicha on a single day, you know what? That shor would not become a shor hamuad. So it's somewhat surprising that the main raya, Maron Rutenberg would quote, is from this view of Rabbi Meir, when in fact, we do not paskin like Rabbi Meir at all, but we assume that time is considered to be critical. So that requires some work, some analysis. What exactly is this view of Marami Rutenberg? What can you and can you not derive from the case of shor hamuad? So to begin, right, this process, The fact that we require three negichos in order for an animal to become a shor hamuad, when you look in the sugni of Amos, Dav Samach David, here the Gemara links this to a fascinating machlokes. We have right, a concept of a chazaka. And how much repetition is necessary in order to establish a chazaka? And this is a machlokes between Rebbe and Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion that betlas zimnei havi chazaka. You have to have threefold repetition in order to go ahead and establish something as a chazaka, and therefore, as we assume, if something is done three times, that already creates a chazaka. And Rebbe disagrees, and Rebbe maintains that it's not true, that betray zimnei havi chazaka, twice is considered to be sufficient, that already indicates a pattern. And in such a case, two is considered to be sufficient for one to argue 30 is a chazaka. So fascinating, machlokes tanaim, as whether chazaka is established, right, when there is a threefold repetition, or do we assume that no, two is considered to be sufficient. Interestingly, the Gemara writes that when it comes to a shor hamuad, the fact that we require three negichos and then you're chayav to the fourth, that is an indicator of the view of Rav Shimon Gamliel, that three times is necessary to establish a chazaka, apparently, that according to Rebbe Shita, one would have to argue, as Tosus does, that shor hamuad is somewhat of an exception based on the psukim of mitmol shalshom, but it doesn't quite fit in with the normal requirements of chazaka. So fasten your machlokes. You want to establish a chazaka. How much repetition is necessary? Two, or do you require three? How do we assume lahalacha in this machlokes? So the Gemara points out that there are many different cases of chazaka. Sometimes we follow the view of Rebbe. Sometimes we seem to follow the view of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. The Gemara cites the following: Rachmana litzlan, a person has a child, they perform a bris milah, and the child dies as a result of the bris milah. Somehow the bleeding does not stop. A child that has hemophilia, for example, in such a case, the child dies. They are mala sibling. The same thing happens as well. So the Mishnah tells us that one is not allowed to perform a bris milah on right, this third child. Is considered to be a case of a sakana. Maybe one could have argued that we haven't as of yet established a sufficient chazaka. Unfortunately, it happened twice, but there was no further repetition. The Gemara says no. When it comes to the case of bris milah, that's what the Rif writes. We follow the shita of Rebbe that betrays zimnei havi chazaka. Mere repetition is considered to be sufficient. We would not do that a third time. What the Gemara calls the case of a katlanis. Let's assume, for example, a woman marries, and all of a sudden her husband suddenly dies. And then she remarries, and the husband suddenly dies. Already, again, details are quite important, but in principle, this is an issue that we call katlanis, that to what extent do we assume that marrying this woman kind of triggered that death. And a lot of details that the Gemara discusses, not Sugya Ramos and the Stam of David, when we assume that this is something that was attributed to her, when do we assume that no, that the marriage was incidental? It's an important teshayla lahalacha. But in that case, the Gemara cites the view of Rebbe that already a pattern is created already as a result of two times, already betray zimne, havi chazak, and now we have to assess what exactly is the cause, what exactly is happening. And in principle, one could envision that maybe we'd say that people should not marry this woman already because of the twofold experience that has occurred. And then the Gemara tells us when it comes to other cases, that's not true. We always insist that betras zimne, havi chazaka. Three times, in fact, is considered to be necessary. The Gemara tells us when it comes to shor hamuad, three negichos, only then do you become a shor hamuad. Or the Rif mentions the case of vestos. We know when it comes to issues of nida that there is a shas haveses. A woman can go in and establish a pattern of re'iyah. So again, the Rif writes as follows: what type of repetition is necessary to say that this is a pattern? If there was successive re'iyah on a given day, so therefore we can invoke the concept of now there is a veses, and therefore, right, this woman has now a veses kavua with different halachos because of an assumption that perhaps she will see dam at that particular time. So here we assume as well that the tzlav zimnei havi chazaka, threefold repetition is necessary. That is considered to be what creates a chazaka. So the Ran is very bothered. This Ran is found in Yevamos and Daf Chaf and Daf Beharit. How do we pass him? Like Rebbe? 2 times? Like Moshe Gamliel? 3 times? And what is the basis of this split? Why do you assume when it comes to Mila, or when it comes to Katlanis, then we assume a threefold repetition is not necessary? 2 is sufficient? When it comes to Shrahamua, when it comes to a case of Vestos, then we assume that no, threefold repetition is needed. The Ran writes the following, a Chiddush. The Ran writes, you know what, we treat this as a suffix. We have a machlokas between Rebbe and Shimon Gamliel. How many times is necessary to establish a chazaka? Right, we treat this as a suffix. And how do you pass it when it comes to a case of a suffix? Well, it depends. If we're talking about a suffix drabanan, lakula. If you're talking about a suffix mamon, hamotzi michavero, olavaraya. If you're talking about a suffix of din nefashos, that would be lakula. That's what the Ran writes. You're dealing with bris mila to suffix sakana. So we're not going to say, oh, let's see if this repeats itself once again. Already after 2 times, that's considered to be sufficient. When it comes to a case of Malkos or a case of Katlanis, we treat that as, again, a suffix of Dina Fashos. 2 times already? Already there is a suffix. When it comes to a case of Shor Hamua, we're interested in the case of a suffix Mamon. If it's suffix Mamon, Hamotzi Mechaber Olavaraya, I cannot exact from the owner of that Shor full payment, because it is only a suffix, and therefore we require the Chumra, a third incident, to label that as a Shor Hamuad. And the Ran writes, the same thing is true when it comes to Vestos. The fact that a woman has established a particular pattern, the Ran writes, based on the Sugya Nidah Tezayin, that Vestos is only Durabanan, and therefore suffix Durabanan is Lakula. That's what the Ran writes. We really are in doubt as to whether it's a pasuk like Rebbe or if Shimon Gamliel, and therefore it's a suffix. And one of the fascinating issues of the halacha is that there are different principles of suffix. You know, the Gaon has a comment in Parshas Shoftim. The Torah tells us, ki halacha davar l'mishpat. If you have a quandary, you have a shaila, so become to Malisa, consult the Sanhedrin. But the Torah elaborates more. Ki halacha davar l'mishpat. The Torah continues, ben dam l'dam, ben din l'din, ben nega l'nega. Why does the Torah have to be so specific? Dam, din, and nega. Just simply say, if you have a question, then consult the Sanhedrin, the Tam Tabalisa. So the Gong points out that realize that these are 3 chelkei ha-halacha. Dam, din, and nega. Let's assume, for example, a person has a case of suffix. How would you paskin in a case of suffix? You know what the answer is? There's a difference between dam, din, and nega. After all, when it comes to dam, if the question is the following, mutter or aser, iser veheter, is a woman muteres al habal, or is she asur labala? In such a case, that's a suffix of iser. How do you pass in suffix iser? Sveika daraisa is lachumra. That's dam. Din is the case where Bez is not paskining mutarasa. They're paskining whether chayiv or potter, whether you must pay, you don't have to pay. How do you paskin in the case of suffix? Hamotzim yichavero, olav haraya. Nega lenega is an issue of whether this is a nega tame or whether it's a nega tahor. How do you paskin when it comes to a case of suffix of tumentari? You know what? There are different principles as well. A suffix tuma has its own world. Now, if it's Pershus HaRabim, Sveiko Tahar. If it's Pershus HaYachid, Sveiko Tamei. The Torah has different principles of suffix when it comes to Mamon, Yisr, and Tumah. And the Gaon writes, that's exactly the implication of Pasuk. That when you have a suffix, Lahalacha, you have to assess, is this considered to be Dam, Din, or Nega? Because the Psak Halacha will be quite different in these cases. It's fascinating that you can have a single suffix, and how you were to paskin will really depend. Tosus writes in Bavakam and Daf Yirala, the details are interesting, but Tosus writes just in broad strokes, let's assume we have a suffix. Whether a woman is Yoledes, whether a woman is a Nida, whether a woman is a Zava, and what is the difference? Well, simply, one issue is whether she is Tamei or Tahora. Another issue is whether she is Asur or Materes. Laval, you know what Tosus writes? In a case of suffix, we're going to apply different principles. And therefore, the Psak Halacha Tosus writes could be astounding. No, the Psak Halacha could be, she's Tahora, but she's Asura Laval. The Psak Halacha could be, she's Temeah, but she is Muteret Tamabal, because these are different realms of halacha. Even though in broad strokes it seems to be the very same issue, but we'll paskin differently in cases of safek. So Tosfos writes that these halachos do not always go hand in hand. So it's interesting. If you ask, how do we paskin when it comes to cases of safek regarding a chazaka? Well, the answer will be, well, it depends. Are you talking about a safek drabanan or a safek daraisa, dinin afashos, areas of dinin mamanos? Because safek will be different in all those cases. And that's the chiddush, the ran, yevamos, and dapchav. But that's what we paskin in reference to that machlokas between Rebbe and Shimon ben Gamliel. To assume that this is true. Correct.
So if
it tafas, Shoshana Gach Shnaim. Right. One could envision differences, right? If it really is Midin Safek, then one could raise that following issue. What happens if there's Tisa in such cases? Now would you turn to the other and assume Hamotze Mechla Varai, right? That's the case of Matziv Takfa Kohen, right? That's a significant machlokas. When you have a Din Safek and you paskin Hamotze Mechla Varai, does Tisa work? Machlokas between the Rambam and Tosos, right? The possibility that Tafas Lamachina Mira, that's what the Rambam writes. When it comes to Safek Mama, the Rambam writes this in Hilchos Kenev as well, in Beis Yedeis, when it comes to cases of Safek Knas also. So right, if you assume that it's Safek, there could really be Nafkamina. I'll give you another Nafkamina. Now, a shor gores three times, a shor becomes a shor hamuad. Right? But according to the Ra'an, it should be a Safek. Right? The Safek. Maybe yes, maybe no. Can the shor ever revert back to being a shor tam? Yes. Let's assume, for example, all of a sudden, the shore has the same opportunity to go. like the Rambam writes, what else is true? No? You're in the same situation, the same circumstance, and you withstand. You don't violate the chait. So that's what the Gemara says regarding a shore. Now, the shore has every opportunity to go, and the shore doesn't go at all. No, so that now is an indicator that the shore is a little more meek, more passive than we originally thought. So if there's a pattern that the shore resists the temptation to Gor, it reverts back to a short time. Here, according to Mukhe Yosef, according to the Ran Wong Yosef Machinish, no, and that is, if already after two times the shore has resisted, maybe two times is considered to be a chazaka, and now I should argue, Hamotze Mechra Varai, and now you can only be Mechai of that individual Chati Nezek, and not Nezek Shalim. Just as it's a suffix to create the status of Shor Hamuad, we should treat it as a suffix to break the status of a shamu. That's a very great finish. We usually assume that you need three times to become a shamuad and three times to break the status of shor hamuad itself. It's an interesting issue. But no, that chiddush of the Ran. But the Ran is a chiddush. The Ran from the Mukhi Yosef as well. Chiddush, no? To assume that that, in fact, right, is true. Because one, no doubt, I could certainly disagree and maintain, is all of this considered to be really midin safek, whether you need two, whether you need three. After all, if it's a safek, as we pointed out in Shramu, it's not so simple. And why neither do we assume three times is necessary? Mukhi Yosef writes, because Vestos is only Drabanan. But Chaim points out, based on the Rambam, that that's really not true. The Rambam maintains that Vestos really, in many respects, really Min HaTorah. Min HaTorah. And therefore, two should be considered sufficient. And we always require a threefold repetition. So Spaletsch pointed out that perhaps one could argue that this question of Rebbe Shem Gamliel, how we assume two or three, is not just simply that there's a suffix, and therefore we're going to go L'chumra or L'kula based on the case, but maybe one could distinguish in principle between various cases. Sometimes two is sufficient, and sometimes three is sufficient. Now, Slavichik argued as follows. Sometimes that all that is necessary is to demonstrate a pattern. To demonstrate a pattern. If that is all we're asked to do, pattern, so therefore, Shrei Zinnei HaBechazaka, that's sufficient. For example, when it comes to a case of a woman who is a Katbanis, her husband has died, when it comes to a case of Bris Mila, is there a pattern that, Rahman al-Islam, the children have died as a result of Bris Mila? If there is a repeated event, if this happened twice, already that's sufficient. That Shrei Zinnei HaBechazaka, that is considered to be sufficient. But you know what? Maybe the Chiddush is as follows. that when you're dealing with Vestos, or you're dealing with the Shor HaMuad, it is more than simply a pattern. Like when you learn these sugyas simply, you would argue as follows. Shor HaMuad, all we're interested in determining is, you know what, that if the Shor has an inclination to be aggressive. And the Machlokas is simply, how long does it take to establish that fact? Maybe that's not really the case. Because when you look in the Gemara Bava Kama Daf Mem Aleph, the Gemara suggests a very great kiddush. My shor damages your animal, I'm chayiv to pay. That's one. My shor goes ahead and damages your animal again, someone else's animal, right? That's two. All of a sudden now, you know what happens? My shor damages the shor shel hefker. The shor shel hefker. The Gemara writes, and Daf Mem Aleph, that's how Rashi and Tosfos understand the Gemara. You know what? That doesn't count. That doesn't count because there was no chiyuv. When it damaged the shor shel hefker, there wasn't a threefold occurrence that I, the owner of the shor, had to pay for the damage that was done. And since that is the case, the shor is not deemed a shor hamur. That sounds somewhat unusual, no? That it damaged once, it damaged twice, then it damaged the third, the fourth, the fifth time, but you know what? It so happens that the third, the fourth, the fifth time, it was a shor that was not owned by any individual. In such a case, the shor remains a shor tam. You know, if all I'm interested in is determining whether the shor is aggressive or whether the shor is not aggressive, why should it make any difference at all whether it was a negicha hamechayeves, whether the goring resulted in any need for payment? What the animal discerns, I only gore a shor shel hefker, but the animal is not going to gore a shor which is owned. In terms of just tendency of an animal, whether it's aggressive, whether in fact it's not, in such a case, what difference did that make? Apparently you see as follows. It's not merely creating a pattern, but rather it means that the Torah tells us the following. In order to reach that level, that adoptive status of being a shor hamuad, it is necessary that one has been convicted. There is negicha mechayeves. There is a chiyuv tashlum that expressed itself three times. And the Gemara writes, and nidan daf yud aleph, the same thing is true. Let's assume a woman has a pattern of seeing dam every 30 days. But you know what? The last time she saw dam on 30 days, it was dam that did not result in nida. For example, that was post-birth. And that midaraisa was dam tohar. And therefore, that does not create min ha-Torah in Isser. So the Gemara suggests a very great kiddush, and that is that that doesn't count in order to establish a veses, because it didn't result in a riyas dam that created that tumah. An interesting kiddush. You see that the case of shor hamuad and the case of nida is different in a sense. It's not just simply trying to establish a pattern, but rather more is necessary. You require a riyas dam that generates tumah. You require negicha that generates a chiyuv tashlumin. That's different from those other cases. Also, they suggested the following possibility. If all we're interested in is looking for some pattern, that's when we follow Rebbe's shita. The two is considered to be sufficient. When we're talking about attaining a certain chalos, a negicha hamechayeves in such a case, that's when we assume as Rav Shimon Gaon, not midin safek, but rather midin Vadai. And that can be used to address our issue as well when it comes to Rami Rittenberg. What was that difficulty? Rami Rittenberg writes as follows, that you see, when it comes to a case of a shor hamuad, that Rabbi Meir maintains, the shorter the window, the more likely that the animal is in fact a shor hamuad. That's true when it comes to Mashiv Ruach as well. That if a person repeats Mashiv Ruach in a short window of time, that establishes already that chazaka, so to speak, that he has said Mashiv Ruach. The difficulty is, we don't paskin as the view of Rabbi Meir, we pass like Rabbi Yudi, need successive days. The answer is as follows. We don't pass like Rabbi Meir when it comes to Shor HaMuad, because in Shor HaMuad, it's not just simply a function of creating the pattern alone. That's where we require a third negicha. And that negicha has to be in negicha hamechayeves, negicha that results in a chiyuv tashlumin. But when it comes to Mashiv Haruach, that's not a chalos, that's just simply, is there a pattern? Did you establish a pattern? That's where Rabbi Ruger writes that everyone would agree that a pattern can be established in a shorter window of time. And that's why we assume the halacha, that that's considered to be a legitimate form of chazaka. It's a fascinating application of the differences between different areas of halacha to assume that whether or not that is considered to be sufficient. Perhaps that's the basis of Rami Rittenberg, that here, Rav Meir's reasoning that the shorter the window of time, the more likely it is to establish a pattern, even though when it comes to a case of a shramuot, you're right, that we pass like Rabbi Yehuda, that's because there a pattern is insufficient. But where all you're interested in is simply a pattern, did you say, did he not say, in that particular case, then the shorter the window of time, the more likely a pattern is in fact established. That's part of the lumdus behind this machlokas between Rabbi Rittenberg and Rabbi Yehuda.
Regarding the Shor HaMuad, we're talking about a Shor HaMuad going to another Shor, damaging another Shor. Let's say instead this Shor is into human beings.
Right.
And after the second time, you say, well, this is a Shor Katlanis, we're not going to wait for the third time, I'm going to call him a Shor HaMuad already.
Right. So even when it comes to a Shor Shenagag HaSa'adam, the same thing is true, that we assume that three times is in fact necessary. Right? Either to establish it as a shore that has a tendency of growing animals, or a shore that has a tendency of growing human beings. So even in that particular case, right. Maybe it's because you have that concept, that chalos, regarding a shore hamoed. Okay. Let me just make an additional point. It's unrelated, but an interesting ha'ar regarding Parshas Noach. Everyone is familiar, right, with Rashi in the very beginning of the Parsha, the Gemara Sanhedrin of Kufes. And why it is that the Torah mentions that Noach was the East Tzadik Hayat Tamim Hayat B'Dor Osav. Why in fact B'Dor Osav? And Rashi writes that Yeshem Rabbeinu Shedorshim Meshach, and Rashi writes that V'yesh Shedorshim L'Gnai. But realize that these were also the view of Rabbeinu. This is Machlokas Riyoch Meshlakish, right in the Sugya, in Sanhedrin Andav Kufres. So Yesh Shedorshim Meshach means that, look, realize what Noach was able to accomplish, like despite his generation, and imagine what he would have accomplished had he been right in the door of Tzadikim. And Yesh Shedorshim Meshach means that now realize that, look, relative to those around him, Noach was considered to be a tzaddik, but had he lived, for example, right, in the Dor of Abram, lo haya nechshav l'klum, that Noach, no one would even have considered Noach at all. So the point that often is troubling is the following. How do you understand, right, the view of Yesh Shedorshim L'Gnai? Why? Simply this. Let's assume it's true. It's really true that only in relation to those around him, Noach was considered to be the tzaddik. And in other generations, he would not have been worthy of mention at all. Let's assume that's a fact. But still one has to ask themselves, why would the Torah mention this? Why in fact would this be the case? And I always envision, let's assume, for example, the shul is honoring a particular couple at its commencement, and these students were chosen as being valedictorian and so on. And the menahel, the rav, would get up and say, you should realize it's true, we chose them as our honorees, we chose them as valedictorian, but that's only because, you know, this year there were such slim pickings that who could we choose? And compared to last year's class and 2 years ago, lo haya nechshav l'klum. No? And you'll confront the rav, the menahel, and say, how did you say that? If it's true, well, good, it's true, but even if it's true, what is the Musar Haskel? Why in fact should that be recited? Now this is the kasha that is found in the Drashas Mahari Mins, in Drasha Dalet. What is the thinking of Rav Yochanan, of Yesh Darshan L'Gnai? Good, it's a fact, right? Noah paled compared to Avram Avinu, fine. But why would the Torah underscore somehow that this is the case? So, you know, it's a fascinating insight. When you look in Parshas Hazinu, the Torah writes the following, that there are times that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angered at Knesset Yisrael. Amarti afehem, ashbistami eno zichron. I'll destroy Knesset Yisrael. Luye kas oyev agur. But the Pasuk says, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu recalls, he realizes the anger of the nations, and he doesn't destroy Knesset Yisrael. So what exactly does that mean? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ready to punish Knesset Yisrael, but he withholds because of kas oyev agur. So Rashi writes, it's understood in the sense of Amay Yomar HaGoyim, that now Kadosh Baruch Hu is ready to punish Knesset Yisrael, But how will the Ummah Salam respond? Will they see that as Hashkafas Hashem? Will they see that Bnei Yisrael committed Averos and therefore being punished? Of course not. They'll see this as their own victory. They will attribute this to the greatness of their gods. So because of the response of the Ummah Salam, so therefore Kadosh Baruch Hu somehow refrains from punishing Knesset Yisrael. That's how Rashi understands that pasuk. So the Ramban and Hazinu, right, disagrees with Rashi and comments, is that could be true? Kadosh Baruch Hu is about to punish, he doesn't do so because of that theme of Ma Yomer HaGoyim. Ma Yomer HaGoyim. The Ramban quotes the pasuk of No, that Ephes, the soul Nechshavulo. Kadosh Baruch Hu is not really that concerned with the response of the Umos Olam. Kadosh Baruch Hu would not withhold punishment just because someone will attribute the punishment to their greatness and not for, right, the real reason that in fact it occurred. So Ramban interprets the pasuk in a somewhat different way. And that is that, you know, Knesset Yisrael at times fall short of the mark. They fall short of the ideal. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is prepared to punish them because, look, they didn't reach the ultimate level of tikkus. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks, kaviyachol, at the Ummah Olam. And in relation to the Ummah Olam, it's true, the Bnei Yisrael may not have reached the plateau of being tzaddik and gemurim, but look, they soared above those around them. And that is the limud zkus of Knesset Yisrael, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu sometimes will judge in a relative sense. That even if objectively one is not considered to be the tzaddik, but relatively speaking, if a person can rise above the influences around him, in such a case, that is ma'orer rachamei shamayim. That's how the Ramban interprets that also, that Amarti Afayim, Ashbisam and Azichram, I'm ready to punish Knesset Yisrael, but I look at the behavior, the demeanor of the Ummah Olam. And therefore Kadosh Baruch Hu says, how can I punish Knesset Yisrael for falling short of the mark when the gap is so great between their Avodas Hashem and the practice of the pagan idolaters that surround them? The Marinim strides, that's the Yesh Darshim Lignai. In the following sense, Kadosh Baruch Hu saved the world in the schus of Noach. You know, if Noach was the ultimate tzaddik, it's not such a chiddush to assume that Kadosh Baruch Hu will save the world on his behalf. But you know, if you realize it was only B'dor Osav, Noach was not, right, the great tzaddik necessarily. Had he lived in a different situation, lo hayah nefshel b'klum. But yet, Kadosh Baruch Hu saved the world, right, through that tool, that vehicle of Noach. Why is that true? Simply because he was able to separate himself, rise above those who surrounded him, and that is sufficient in order to ma'orer rachamei shamayim. That's what the Marinim writes. That is the Musar Haskel of Yeh's Darshan L'Gnai. It's not coming to criticize and to berate that Noah, good, you think that you're great, right? In another context, you wouldn't have been worthy of mention, but rather it means that the source of Knesset Yisrael, simply in setting themselves apart from those who surround us, that itself is not something that should be minimized. Even if one somehow doesn't reach the ultimate plateau of being the tzaddik gamur, the Marinim writes that is the chiddush of the Yesh HaDarshan L'Gnai. Not to criticize, but rather to indicate, as the Ramban writes, pshat in that pasuk in Parashas Hazinu. This is a beautiful biur, simply, right, on why it is that one would somehow tend to minimize the greatness of Noah. The answer is no, because that is what elicits the greatest sense of rachamei shamayim. Okay.
Thank you.